This is episode 72 of the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops with James Ealing. In this episode, we focus on the importance of culture in a business. You can support this podcast by purchasing guides from www.ciaops.com/publications. There you will find a range of information on using technologies like SharePoint and Office 365. You'll also find templates there to use on your own SharePoint site to help your business get up to speed quickly. Reseller options are also available. All of this can be downloaded immediately at www.ciaops.com/publications. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name is Robert Crane, and in this episode, I'm joined once again by James Ealing. Welcome, James.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
Not too bad. So what we might get you to do once again, I know you've only been on recently, but if you want to introduce yourself to our listeners and just let them know who you are and what you do.
So yes, James Ealing. I'm the Managing Director of Extreme Networks, an IT company based in the sunny Mornington Peninsula in Victoria. We, like a lot of companies, provide an outsource IT department for small to medium-sized businesses, but we've started to branch out into some of the more interesting and lucrative areas like application development.
Cool. All right. So what sort of size is your business there, James?
We would currently have 18 people in the team.
And how long has it taken you basically to get to that sort of size? How many years have you been, you know, did it start out with yourself? Give us a bit of a, you know, a background as to the growth phase of Extreme Networks.
Yeah, sure. So we started in 1999 and they were the good old years. I was working part-time just slowly built up a client base. We were lucky to get a couple of government contracts and that funded our second employee. And from there, we've just sort of grown. We had quite a strong period of growth in, let me just have a look, 2004, we were featured in the BRW Fast 100 and we'd grown the company to about 11 people then. And we sort of spent a few years after that, or a few years after, for probably about 5 years, we sort of bumbled around between 10 and 15 employees. Then we sat down, put another layer of management in, and we've started growing fairly strongly in the last sort of 12, 18 months.
Okay, so obviously you've got lots of experience then with, you know, I suppose bringing on staff and running up staff and looking after staff. And one of the things that I thought that we'd cover today, and I think you'd be a very good person to give us some experience and background and thoughts on this, is how important culture is to a business, even a small business, even a very small business. So maybe to kick things off, why don't you let us know, or let the listeners know, what you define as culture? Now, when we say culture in a business, what do we actually mean?
The way I describe it is it's the way that things are done around here. So it covers things like the way that we treat each other, the way that we treat our customers, the norms, the values of the organization. They're the kind of things. It's a fairly intangible and fluffy type subject, but it's probably the most important thing. Even in an organization with only, you know, two or three people in it, culture is really, really important. And the big mistake that I made was that if you don't manage the culture, then a culture is going to grow. It's up to the leader of the organization to take responsibility for that, because if they don't, then the culture is going to flourish without any direction, and it can go in all sorts of crazy directions.
So I think the important thing there is obviously that culture is not something, well, I suppose it is, but culture is something that you need to manage, something as you need to drive, like any other resource. You can let it, I suppose, grow in the background, but then you end up with a garden full of weeds potentially and going in a direction that you may not want. And I think it would be fair to say that if you end up with a culture that's a bit full of weeds or has weeds in it, those weeds are very, very hard to get out. You're better off making sure they don't appear at first. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. It cost us a fortune, that mistake. I was under the mistaken impression that, you know, if you paid people to come along to work. They would come along, do the job and go home, and everyone would be happy with that. But it's certainly not like that. And we had a culture built around doing the bare minimum in the company, not looking after the customers too well. I'm talking, this is quite a long, you know, probably 2006, 2007.
And is that a culture that just manifested itself? You didn't manage it? Is that the sort of the issue that you had? Did it just sprung up and then you, one day it sort of came to your notice that this was becoming a problem?
Exactly. I mean, our goal for 2 years had been to build the company so that we could be featured in the BRW Fast 100. And, you know, it's like the old saying, revenue is vanity, profit is sanity. Once we achieved that goal, though, we didn't really have anywhere to go past that. We didn't set a follow-on goal. And, yeah, just a culture of laziness and just sort of not really any direction or drive from me. And so we had people who kind of expected that, you know, they didn't really need to do too much. They didn't need to build too many hours. That became the prevalent culture around here. And Tina, my partner, and I sat down and we thought, you know, we need to change it. And we probably took 5 years to change the culture. We would have been much, much better off if we decided to sack everyone over a 12-month period, apart from probably a couple of people. But sack everyone over a 12-month period and replace them would have been a lot easier to do it that way.
So what was sort of the point that you decided that, you know, this isn't working? Or what was there a single moment that sort of said, you know, well, we need to change this, this is a problem? Or was it something that sort of, you know, crept up on you and then you found out? Was there one sort of, you know, can you narrow it down to a single point where this sort of thing struck you in the face? Or was it just a growing feeling that things weren't working as optimally as they could?
Oh, look, they definitely weren't as optimal as they could. You know, we were making pretty good money, but I think the real realization was that I didn't like coming to work anymore. You know, I would expect, I have an expectation around how the customers are going to be looked after, and pretty much there was only me and probably a couple of other people who shared that expectation, and I felt like I was in a minority in my own organization. And so we realized that we needed to change that culture. And it took a really long time. We had a couple of senior engineers who were just lazy, and it was like, you know, I've been with the company for 6 or 7 years. You know, I don't need to do what James says. I can do whatever I like. And you know, we would have been just better off firing them and replacing them with new, fresh blood.
So when you obviously, you know, made this decision, what did you see as your roadmap going forward? What was your sort of plan to change the culture? Because obviously it took you, you know, as you say, 5 years. But did you have any indication at the beginning that it was going to take that long? Did you, you know, were you expecting you'd be able to modify it quickly? Did you, you know, what sort of plan did you put in place, if any, to say, look, you know, the culture's not what we want. It's not the organisation that you know, I aspire to. I want to change this. How do you go about changing it?
So basically we fell back onto the things that had made the company great when we were growing quite quickly. So we've got four key values at Extreme Networks: fun, learning, ownership, communication. And we started driving those to be, you know, part of the part of the expectations around the way that people were going to act. We didn't have a mission statement, so we came up with a mission statement, which was, we take care of the computers while you take care of business. I think we did, but we just didn't really reference it a lot, because we ended up having that for about 10 years, and we've only just replaced it a couple of years ago, or probably 18 months ago, with our new mission statement. And those tools, I think, helped quite a lot in... it was a grind, though, because we're not the kind of company where we just sack people willy-nilly. But I think that it would have been better off for everyone if we had replaced the culture. Because literally the culture had become it wasn't really bad. It was just a culture of, you know, near enough is good enough, of accepting mediocrity. And I think, you know, now it's a lot harder to run a small business, and you can't be aiming. Mediocrity is nowhere near good enough now. You really need to be doing a really good job and then accepting that some of your customers still aren't going to be happy. Back in the, when we started the company, I was amazed at how bad we were and that customers still liked us, because I started the company by myself and I had no technical experience. So it would often take me a day to fix a problem that would normally take an engineer, you know, half an hour or an hour. But our key values, you know, I'd communicate with the customer what was going on. You know, I'd take ownership of the problem, those sort of things. We lost that in the middle years, and then just, you know, sort of really reinforcing it again and again and again.
Okay, so you know, you've gone on this journey of changing the culture, and obviously the experience you had is that it would seem to indicate that your feeling is that culture is far more important than maybe the staff or the technical know-how. So you'd be quite prepared to get the culture right, and that may mean taking some big steps and, you know, removing people who aren't able to assimilate to that culture. I mean, is that how dramatic it was for you?
We are Nazi-ish about it now. Tina interviewed for a technical position, and like it's pretty hard to find good technical people over the last 12 months, we've found. We technical interviewed someone, and he was probably the best candidate we'd seen in 3 years. And Tina had actually said, you know, yep, we just need to do some reference checks, but we'd like you to, you know, to offer your position. The guy gave us his two referees, and the first one said a couple of things that were concerning. We did a bit more background research, and Tina actually rang him up and said, no, you can't start with us. You're not going to fit our culture. And he was head and shoulders the best engineer that we'd interviewed in at least 3 years. And of all of the people we'd interviewed, he'd probably be in the top three. But he wasn't going to fit our culture. So it was a clear, open-cut decision. See, one of our things is open communication, and we had a cut. I wanted to speak to one of the senior engineers about whether we should hire this guy or not, really as an educational process, because I'd already made my mind up that he wasn't going to start with us. Because as the leader of the organization, I take responsibility for the culture. But I wanted to make sure that everyone else knew exactly why we weren't going to hire this guy who was a brilliant engineer. And he was talking to one of the customers, and I said to the customer, I wanted to speak to one of the engineers, but you know what? This affects you just as much as it does affect us. And we'd found some things online that this guy had said that made us think that he wasn't going to fit our culture. And we showed the customer, and I said, would you be happy with this guy looking after your network? And he said, nah, I wouldn't be. And I said, oh, that's good, because we're not going to hire him. So it's that. Really making sure, and we try really hard. Like, so when we place an ad, we mention what our values are. I give a 15-minute speech before we interview anyone about what our values are, what the expectations are. So when we do reviews, all of the criteria are based on each of the four values. So we've really tried to embed it deeply into the company.
Okay, so is it difficult, obviously, to find people? Because the culture of the business, typically in a small business, has come from you as a business owner. You know, is that something that you can endear to, you know, in staff and find the right people? Doesn't that make the hiring of staff even more difficult to a point where it may be, you know, next to impossible? Or do you look at somebody and say, look, it would seem to me they've got the, you know, the core of what we're after, you know, the basis, and we can build our culture on top of that. I mean, how do you make that decision that you know, this person technically may be fine, but the cultural fit, you know, obviously they probably won't have that culture initially, but you believe or you can see that they will, you know, take your culture on board, they're prepared to work with it, they're prepared to achieve basically what your desires are for the business.
You have a realization that it is difficult to hire. So we might go through a round of hiring. We might look at 100 resumes. We might phone interview 20. We might bring in 10, and we might not hire. So one of the things that we learned is maybe is no. If someone says, oh, look, maybe he'd be good, then that's like, well, nah. We're not going to hire, we don't hire maybes here. We only hire, yes, that person would be able to bring something to the organization. And you're looking like, is the person going to be fun to deal with? You know, we spend a lot of time at work. So And we've had people in the past who've been prima donnas or who've stressed out a lot, you know. We don't like that. It's difficult to work with those people. They make it uncomfortable for everyone. So we try not to hire those people. The people who don't like picking up the phone and talking to a customer, you know, it's all about communication in our game. If they're not prepared to do that, that means that someone else has got to do it, and that's not fair on someone else. So we try not to hire those people. They need to be, you know, conscientious. They need to take ownership of issues for the customer, because that's what the customers pay us for. You know, they don't want us to be going back and saying, oh, you know, we don't know what to do here, or can't really work out what the problem is, so we'll just hope it goes away. We can't have that kind of customer interaction, so we look for people who we think are going to try and take ownership of things.
So, again, do you have, I suppose, you know, a process to endear this culture into, you know, your new hirees, and also to reinforce it with the employees that are on board? So obviously you've got your mission statement, you've got your core values, but, you know, what's the day-to-day stuff? What's the, you know, the things that really endear this culture to a group of people? And I think probably the other thing in all of this is that a culture is very much like a tribe mentality. So as you mentioned, you can't have necessarily prima donnas, people working on their own, people, you know, out on the left field. You've all got to pull together as a team. Now, managing a group of people with different personalities and different goals and drives and dreams and those sort of things is obviously a very, very difficult thing to do, and gets more so the bigger you get. What sort of techniques do you have to endear this culture, to reinforce it and to really make it a strong drive and a strong bond between your team, so that, you know, if somebody can't do something, somebody will pick up the phone. If somebody needs to take out the trash, anybody can do it. You know, if a job needs doing, somebody jumps in and does it, rather than leaving it to someone else, as you indicated.
So the big thing is that we continually reinforce our key values. We have a Monday morning meeting, which we hold on Wednesdays. And we will often either go through and say, you know, so what did everyone learn last week, or what fun did we have? Or we'll go through and say, you know, what was the biggest value for you last week? When we talk about people's behavior, we'll reference it. You know, that made it fun for everyone when you did this, or, you know, it wasn't fun because you hadn't checked this and that happened.
Sorry, Jamie, how long does that meeting go for?
That's an hour long meeting with the entire corporate team. Yep. We also have a daily meeting, which we have at 11 past nine. So it's our 9:11 meeting. And that's a stand-up meeting for the team. And they just go through and answer four quick questions. There are also opportunities to reinforce the values. The other thing is, I saw a definition last year which I really liked of values, and it's the one thing that will drive an owner berserk. And literally, I can go from zero to really, really, really unhappy when I see someone contravening our values. People make mistakes, and some people have made really big mistakes, and I've just said, oh, you know what, don't worry, everyone makes mistakes, don't make the same stupid mistake next time, and you just roll on. Other people will say one tiny little thing which is the opposite of our values, and yeah, worlds collide for them, and it gets very untidy very, very quickly. And people know that, like, literally it's those kind of demonstrations of the importance of values that sort of drive home what behaviour is encouraged and what behaviour is unacceptable.
So the culture that you're endearing, is this just totally something you're developing internally, or are you looking at, you know, other organisations as examples and saying, you know, that'd be good if we could do that, and that's a good idea here and we should incorporate in this? Or is it basically only growing from within your business and that sort of thing? Are you looking to, you know, best practices outside your business, outside your industry, and incorporating them into the business, obviously, perhaps to see whether they work and reinforce the culture?
So the bedrock things we don't really change. So we've got a BHAG, a big, hairy, audacious goal, which is to make a meaningful difference in people's lives. Which is good. It's a little bit fuzzy though. So, you know, we always try and draw out how, you know, when we do that, or when we move closer to doing that with the team. On top of that, you've then got the mission, which is our mission now is to solve small business problems. On top of that, then you've got the four values. They're that they don't change too much. So the mission, we had one. Missions usually are good for about 10 years. And our old mission was we take care of the computers while you take care of business. And customers, probably on about three occasions, we lost a couple of good customers. And they said, you guys do a really good job of taking care of the computers, but we want more. And when the customers were actually putting our mission statement or using our own mission statement as the reason why they left us, I thought, wow, you know, obviously there's something strategically wrong with the company direction, so we need to fix that. And that's why we've got a broader, more encompassing mission statement now. There's also a range of other tools that we use. So things like psych profiling. So everyone in the company goes and does psych profiling.
That psych profiling, is that something you've developed internally or have you gone to an external party to create that?
External party, yeah. So right. We do DISC training.
Right, yep, yep.
Which, you know, works out really well because it helps within the team. You know, communication as to, you know, why someone acts like that.
Can you just give us like a, you know, a 2-minute summary of what, you know, the DISC is and how it sort of, you know, has helped? Just give us a quick overview of what it is for those who may not be aware of it.
Yeah, sure. So there's a whole heap of personality profiling. A lot of them are based on four different types. You know, there's Myers-Briggs, which I'm a really big fan of, but it's very unwieldy in a team. There's a 2-day Myers-Briggs session that you can do, which I've done and is fantastic. But DISC is something that can be answered within 30 questions, and there's four different personality types, of which each person scores on each of those areas. So people who are high D are typically leaders. Their vision, they're not very detail orientated, short attention spans, very much like me. Eyes, you know, thrive on human interaction, so they'll be telling all sorts of stories, and they're very big on family and relationships and things like that. S's are stable people. They like checklists, and I'm grossly generalizing here. And high C's are people who, you know, typically your accountant types. They like to make sure that everything balances and they need a lot more information to be able to work. We find that certain personality types have perform certain roles within the company a lot better than others. So, for instance, I've never found someone who's a really good troubleshooter who is an awesome project manager. I believe it's very difficult to find that in one person. We find our troubleshooters, the people who are the best troubleshooters in the company, are usually very poor at project management. And so, like, when I was on the tools, I was really, really good at troubleshooting. I loved it, but I hated project management because it's just not my thing. So we always try and, you know, structure the work around each of the individuals so that they're happier and less stressed, because, you know, we're talking to them in a way that they're comfortable with and we're giving them the kind of work that they're comfortable with as well.
So the DISC profiling, which is DISC, I believe, or DISQ?
Yes.
DISC?
Yep.
Do you use that as part of the interview process as well when you're profiling somebody there?
No, but sometimes we will, if we were to hire for a project manager role, we would make sure that the ad had a lot of high C type terms in it. And we would, I mean, you get a feeling for what a person is like when you're talking to them. There's a whole heap of cues that people give off. And we will often say, you know, I think that person was a really high C, or you could tell that guy was a high I. It's one of the things that we've embedded into the company. So, and, you know, we'll say to someone, look, stop being such a high C, you know, just get on with it. And everyone in the company knows exactly what we mean by that.
Okay.
Or they'll say to me, you're being too big a D. You need to actually pay attention to this because this is important. And I'll be like, oh, but I don't want to. Mm. But I do.
Well, I think part of that, I mean, like I said, an important part of that is, and I think this is the real benefit you're bringing to your organisation, is that, you know, everybody has different personalities. Everybody responds in, typically, you know, most personality psych tests divide people up into, to, you know, four quadrants. And I think that the key there is the communication part, because, like you said, different people respond to different incentives, different language, different motivations. And again, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just that they are different. And I think, unfortunately, that because we, especially in the technology business, we tend to look at things as, you know, this is a Windows system, so all Windows systems are the same, and this is a Mac system, all Mac system. We, you know, we tend to generalize and say everything's the same. But when we come to the wetware, the actual people behind the thing, they are very, very different, and they're motivated by different things, and they speak a different language, and obviously they're trying to achieve things in a different way. So I think the key to it, obviously, is paying attention to the differences between your staff. And I think one of the terms that I like that you use is, you know, the right person in the right seat on the bus. And I think that's a great thing that a lot of businesses can take forward, because you see so many of them, you know, trying to drive this thing forward and push it forward, and they've got the wrong people in the wrong job, and they're getting these conflicts. And again, it's all interpersonality, and it's actually creating a drag on their business rather than making it easier for them. And I think that's, again, one of the key things that I think that, that you obviously have sorted out and incorporated into your business, which I don't see a lot of. So I think that's a big benefit you're bringing. I think that's a smart thing that a lot of businesses could do, and there are the tools out there to do it. You just need to pay some attention to it. Because I think as a technical business, most people look at it and say, you know, all I've got to worry about is technical. I've just got to be better technical, better technical, better technical. But you know what? At the end of the day, what we do is customer service. You know, we need to provide a service to the customer, because they're the ones, only when they're happy, they're going to pay us. So that's really what it's about, isn't it?
I think definitely. And when you go that one step further as well, we sell technology solutions. And you know, probably about 8 years ago, we sold our biggest CRM system. It was our biggest services sale that we'd ever done. And we did everything that they wanted us to do and more. We did some things that the software people didn't think were capable with, that the software was capable of doing. So technically, it was a really good implementation, and we were really happy with it. But no one ever used the system. And The company didn't blame us. They just said, oh, look, you know, it's been really hard to get people to use the system. But to me, it was like, wow, these guys just spent all of this money. They're really happy with what we've done, but we haven't created any value for them whatsoever. And when you implement a technical solution, we're now always looking at, you know, the cultural aspects of it, because if you implement a technical solution and no one uses it, then you may as well have not done anything at all. And when you, like, I find particularly some of the organizations that are out there do spend a lot of time managing their culture. And when we talk to them about helping them to manage their culture, it's a much more meaningful engagement with the customer, because we're speaking the same language and we're actually going for those higher order problems that they've got, that they know that they've got. And the thing I love about it is that we're having a conversation with them that no other IT company is having.
I think, again, that's the key here. I think, unfortunately, in our today's world, we get so caught up with speeds and feeds, and this looks great, and the newest iPhone version of this, and this is fantastic. And you know, it was very eye-opening for me when you go back to trying to implement technology for your parents or someone who's not in technology day in and day out. It's only them you get to see their struggles and you understand things. Why doesn't this work together? And this is difficult to understand. Living in a technology bubble tends to cloud your vision. And I think that also comes true because most small business IT providers have come from a technical background. They're very stereotypical, the technician, the on-site, the hands-on person. And when it comes to growing their business and adding staff, what they're trying to do is generally photocopy themselves and get another technician who is exactly the same as them and has the same drive and all that, but that's never going to be the case. So, again, paying attention to the human aspects is really what makes businesses effective. And part of it is that, you know, really, if you've got a team that's working together really well and being effective, then you're going to need a lot less staff. You're going to get a lot more productive work out of them. And I think that's something that a lot of businesses, not just in technology, are overlooking, is this human factor. There's a lot of talk about it. There's a lot of things that people may do, but I don't see a lot of them being particularly effective. And I think part of that is that culture that you're talking about endearing and how important it is. And it's something I think that a lot of businesses overlook and don't realize how important it is because, unfortunately, for a technical person, it's a touchy-feely subject. You know, how do I know it's better? How do I measure that, you know, in 3 months' time, it's better by so many points than it was before? I think that's the hard thing to do for a lot of technical people is how do I measure and how do I know my culture is improving rather than just this feel. I'm a bit uncomfortable with this feel thing. I mean, is that a sort of a fair statement that we, for technical people to come to grips with this concept of culture is how does it all work? It's all too, you know, difficult to get my hands around.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's very difficult to get, you know, tangible. Like I love metrics. You know, we've got, we pull all sorts of metrics and we display them on a monitor in the office so that everyone can see how everyone's doing. But you can't measure culture readily. We can't say, you know, we had 15% more fun this week over last week and, you know, people didn't take ownership 12% or, you know, 10 times more often. So it is very intangible and it's something that, you know, people are uncomfortable with, particularly when they're coming from a technical background. But I know, you know, like from my own sanity, you know, like I love coming to work because I'm here with people who are aligned with what I'm trying to do. We've all, you know, got the customers top of mind. You know, we're always trying to do the right thing by the customer. And we're excited by what we do, you know. So we've worked hard to try and get... Now, the big thing, though, is that I think it's really important to embrace diversity. We've got some really good project managers and we've got some really good troubleshooters. We've got some people who are really good at building really deep and meaningful relationships with CXO-type people in our customer organisations. And we've got some people who are really gifted technically. We've got very few people who can do all of those things. And that's the whole, that is the strength of the team, is that, you know, one day someone goes out and does one thing and then the next day someone else comes out and does something completely different, but we're all on the same page with what the customer's trying to achieve. And we're all working towards a common goal. And I think it's important that you have a fairly diverse team. And that's one of the things that we're gifted with here is that we do have a diverse team that gets along really, really well.
So as part of the culture that you endear in your business, would you also say that it attracts or it confirms customers who have the same culture? Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, definitely. You know, one of the things I say is life's too short to be dealing with crappy customers. There's millions of customers out there. And, you know, one of our key values is fun. If it's not fun dealing with a customer, then we get rid of them. You know, like I don't want the guys worrying about getting yelled at by one of our customers. You know, like if something bad goes on or if they're having a really bad day and they, you know, want something to kick and our engineer just happens to be in the way, then, you know, we can cut them a bit of slack in regard to that. But, you know, the kind of customer who's continually, you know, questioning every invoice, you know, saying that the engineers didn't do the right thing or yelling at them or whatever.
It comes down to probably a respect thing too, you know. I mean, like I said, you know, we're all doing this for commercial reasons. We're all doing this to put food on the plate and to be successful and achieve our goals. But you're right. I think that, you know, again, you know, a fair wage for a fair work is what it wants. And I think that one of the things that is not appreciated, especially in the smaller end of town, it seems to me, is the networking, is the actual relationship you have with your customers, with your staff, with your peers, with all that sort of stuff. And that, again, that's how you can, you know, look for people with similar culture. That's how you can attract people. But that's the important thing, is to look at that networking. And again, it's more than just a job, as you've mentioned. And like I said, I mean, how many hours do you spend at work over your life? It's a significant amount of time. And, you know, you really don't want to be spending that doing something that you're not happy with. And I see so many people who are doing that, but unable or unwilling to make that change or take that risk and again do something that really charges them up and gives them a better life. So unfortunately, I think what you have done and what you're achieving there is a bit of a rarity. But I think the difference is you've taken the acknowledgement, you know, and then you've also taken steps to endear that and to make it happen, which is, you know, again, the two-step process, obviously indicating that it's an issue and then doing something about it. And I think the third thing is that so many people we see in business don't actually follow through. They do it for 1 week, 2 weeks or whatever, but the regularity of reinforcing it constantly and building it, as you said, into so it's natural becomes that part of the culture. So you don't even have to think about it after a while. It's the natural part of the business. So that's probably the end game that you're looking for. And after all the years of hard work, you're getting to that point now where it's just the natural part and you know and your employees know exactly what the culture of the business is. I mean, is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the people can see where we are now. We're quite open with, you know, things like our revenue numbers, our revenue targets, where we're going to be in 5 years' time. And the guys know that we're on the path to achieving those goals and they know what's in it for them. So, you know, it's important to align their needs, wants and desires with that of the organisation. And I think that's another important tool that we've used is that I don't want anyone to come here for a job. You know, we're about doing something bigger than just coming along and fixing PCs or installing servers or whatever it is. You know, externally, you know, we do try to make a meaningful difference in people's lives. And every now and then, and it's difficult to do that, it's difficult to make a meaningful difference, but every now and then we do actually achieve that, and so we highlight that. And the guys know what we're trying to do internally to make a meaningful difference. And, you know, the guys are excited to come to work, and because it, you know, they can see that, you know, it is more than just fixing computers.
Well, I think part of it too is that's one of the benefits a smaller organization can give. You know, any of your engineers or any of your staff can come to you with issues or problems or suggestions. I mean, in a large organization where you're in a cubicle, that just doesn't happen. The bureaucracy and the culture tends to weigh you down and you're, you know, pigeonholed. And I think that's one of the big advantages that a lot of small businesses don't exploit that attracts, you know, those good employees who want that flexibility, who want that opportunity, who again, want to shine and want to go above beyond their normal role, because, you know, that's what motivates them. And I think, again, a lot of organisations need smaller organisations need to promote that and make sure that happens so that you get those employees who are willing to come to work. Because on the scale of, you know, why do you go to work, a lot of people don't necessarily go there just for the money. They do it because they have a sense of worth. And it's the Simon Sinek thing. It's all about, you know, why first. It's not how or what you do, it's about why you do it. And that makes a big difference. And I think a lot of organizations, especially smaller ones, are trying to mimic the big organizations and doing the what and the how rather than really working out the why. And I think once you've got the why, you can say, well, you know, we're not this, we are this, we're not this, and this gives you particular focus. And that focus is what generally most employees want. They want to have somewhere where they can come in, they know what they're trying to achieve, they know their goals, and they know what the rewards are they're going to achieve if they're able to get to those levels. So again, something that simple can pay off obviously large results. And I think you're obviously seeing the rewards from investing in that.
Yeah, so and it's things like, you know, decreased turnover. You know, it's a hiring is one of the is a very expensive process, and it's, as I said, it's really difficult to do, and it's difficult to do right. So the more that we can decrease turnover, means that the customers are happier because they, you know, they don't see a continuing stream of engineers. And we've picked customers up because they've said, you know, they've been looking after us for 4 years and we've had four different main points of contact in that time. And no one knows what's going on with our network. I mean, we've got customers who use us because we've been looking after, we have more organizational knowledge than a lot of their senior management because we've been looking after the organization for 10 years. And we've got people who have been with that company for all of that time. So, you know, that's one big trade-off in having a great culture is that it helps decrease your turnover. You get more engaged staff, which means that, you know, the customers are more likely to have a high level of satisfaction, more likely to refer us to other people, because they can they pick up the fact that the guys are happy to work here and they're excited about what they do.
And I think that's an important thing is that sort of attitude can really, really make a difference and really make you stand out. I mean, you know, I suppose everybody's had that experience where you know, take your car for service or maybe your fridge, you know, fixed or whatever. And the difference between a good service experience and a bad service experience and someone who's engaged and someone who's obviously keen to help you and you know, happy working is a huge difference between someone who's, you know, just there to take your money and basically put you on your way. So, again, I think most people are happy to pay for a premium for that sort of service. But again, you know, they are doing, you know, trying to achieve more than just a job and they're looking for that sort of positivity. And I think that's one of the key things that differentiates the, you know, the good businesses. It's all about being positive. You know, okay, things can have hiccups, we can have issues, we can have challenges, but at the end of the day, we're not going to particularly have a very enjoyable day or life if we're constantly looking at the bad things or let them get us down. So that positivity needs to flow through. And part of that is that as a field engineer dealing with customers all the time, it can be very tough. You can get into a corner where you've just had a bad day. But coming back into a culture where you're going to get reinforced and, you know, you get support, I think it really makes a big difference, especially for a technical person, because there are days when you can't solve something and being able to come back to an office and say, look, you know, I made a mistake or I stuffed up, and, you know, getting that support from other people is the big thing, and that's going to, as you say, indicate that it's better for them to stay on, they're going to be more engaged, less likely to look for turnover, and again, that's going to reflect it in the bottom line, which is really what you're after. So to me, it sounds like all of this stuff is pretty simple, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of people doing that. I mean, you know, why don't more smaller businesses, you know, focus on this concept of culture and really drive that into their organisation, do you think?
Well, I think there's two things. One is, you know, a lack of knowledge about it. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, we've got to pay our mortgage, but more importantly, we're responsible for the mortgage of, you know, all of our team. So when you think of all of the mortgages combined, that's a hell of a lot of money to owe banks. So I've always thought, and you know, learning is one of our four key values. As the owner of the company, you know, I don't do Microsoft exams, but I am continually reading business books and, you know, thinking about how we can get the edge so that we can stay ahead of our competitors. You know, I did an MBA at Mount Eliza Business School, which was very big on culture and leadership, and I think that's probably one of the best things that I ever did because of the fact that it gave me a really clear understanding of what was required. And it's that was just the start of it. I then joined the Army Reserve to do officer training to further learn more about leadership. And, you know, it's been 10 years since I started that journey, and I'm still, you know, probably only halfway to where I want to be as a leader and halfway to where, you know, I want our organization to be. And the other thing is that it, you know, it does cost money. You know, that you're taking time out of the business to study. You know, we spend, fun is one of our key values. So we look for ways to make it fun to come to work. We have a massage guy come every fortnight to give everyone who wants a corporate massage a bit of an opportunity to de-stress. As an incentive, a couple of our guys went on Ferrari and Lamborghini drive days. You know, we take our name Extreme Networks moderately seriously. We've done pistol shooting, skydiving, paintball, rally driving, armored vehicle driving, all sorts of crazy stuff like that. So it's a fair investment in that. And for something that there's no tangible return in the profit and loss, I think a lot of people are kind of put off by that, but I know when we go out to recruit, like, we lead with our culture. This is who we are. And people go, I've worked in three other IT companies and I've never worked in an IT company like this. And it's like, wow, you know, maybe you're ready to step up.
Well, I think, again, this is what we're talking about, is that if you're looking for key staff, right, and we all know that at the moment it's a real challenge to get the key staff, to get the, you know, the good people, this is your differentiation. This is above and beyond what the pay packet is. This is the fun reason. This is the intangible, and this is something that, you know, doesn't cost you potentially, you know, dollars and cents, you know, that you have to out of your pocket, but you do have to work on it. You have to build on it. But again, the payoff is exponential because, you know, like I said, those simple drive days or those other experiences that you've done, again, speak volumes, and people talk about, and the staff talk, and they talk about their customers. And again, it just grows and grows and grows and grows. So again, it's a small investment up front to get a bigger return. But I think, unfortunately, it seems to be very short-sighted that people look at this as, okay, what's my ROI tomorrow? What's my ROI at the end of the week? This is something, as you've mentioned, that's taken you 5 years to do a turnaround, and you're working on it basically every day to keep improving it. And again, it's not something simple, but I think you would seem to indicate that it's definitely worthwhile.
Yeah, definitely. I think the big thing with one of the biggest traps that we found is, what do you do when you have a really good engineer who doesn't share your values? And, you know, it's one of those ethical dilemmas. You know, you end up and I know in the past we've taken, instead of taking the hard right, we've taken the easy wrong. And now that we've learnt the cost of, you know, having people who don't share your values, you know, we were like, oh yeah, but that guy's really good. He bills a lot. You know, he should be in our team. And it's like, but he doesn't share our values. You know, he's not a team player. It's harder to you know, to address those issues. But we've worked really hard to make sure that, you know, like, we try and get the reviews done on time. We try and be open with our feedback to all of the team. You know, this is where we think you're doing really well. This is where, you know, and this is one of the things that we find, is that people come into our organization and they get a review and it's like, wow, I've been working for 10 years and never had a review. And it's like, well, how do you know, like, how do you know how you're going? How do you work out what your personal professional development plan is? And, you know, it's kind of scary that people can work in the IT industry for 10 years and never get a review.
Yeah, it is. I think, again, part of it is that, you know, the you have to look at the individual and you have to look beyond your own organisation. And what I tell people is that you need to be looking for employees constantly, but also when that employee chooses to move on, which they will do, they want to change a career, that's not the end of their involvement with your organisation. You should be keeping in touch with them through LinkedIn, social media, emails, having coffee with them, whatever, because not only will that person potentially maybe come back and work for you when they've had a bit more development, or they may recommend somebody they know into your business. So many people I see, they put the emphasis on, I put an ad in the paper, I get 1,000 CVs and I find the one person. I really think now it's getting to the point where it's the way, if you've got this culture built into it, then basically, you know, the only way to sort of spread that is through the word of mouth. And that's what you're looking for. I don't know if you can really convey that through a job ad and going through, you know, I suppose you can, and you've been able to do that process. But again, I think the thing that so many smaller businesses overlook is that word of mouth, is that networking, is that, you know, the integration with people to try and attract people to their business. So I think that's a key thing that can be done fairly cheaply to find these sort of people that do match the ones for your organisation.
And I think so we found a couple of people through word of mouth. I think probably more importantly, we haven't hired some people because of word of mouth. So some people who look good on paper, interview well, because the big thing with job interviews that I hate is that they test people who interview well. They don't. There's no real indicator of whether they're going to be able to perform the job well. There's no real indicator whether they're going to share your values. They just show that people who can interview well. And I know we had someone who had worked at a company that one of our employees had left and gone to. And I rang him up and he was a little bit surprised. It had been a couple of years since we spoke. And I said, hey, do you know this guy? And he goes, yeah. And I said, what do you reckon? He's applied for a job here. And he goes, yeah, I know you. You wouldn't like him. And, yeah, there were some issues about his lack of attention to detail. And it's that informal network that is, you know, I think critical, because hiring the right person is one thing. You know, it's just as good to not hire the wrong person.
Well, I think again, part of it is that you know, we overlook as small businesses, unfortunately. You know, the thing is, you're typically a technician, you're typically a lone gun when you come out. You know, the way that you create your business is you think you can do your job better than anybody else, otherwise you wouldn't go out into this world and do the business. And I think that the sooner that you realize that you can grow or exponentially leverage what you're doing through networking, through your peer network, through your employees, through other contacts, through whomever, that's when, you know, things start to pick up. But I see so many people who, again, seem to want to maintain this total control all the time. And again, the superhero syndrome, I suppose they call it. You get so much more leverage, so much more power by leveraging, you know, this network and something that really should be built out. And it's going to flow into especially things like human resources, where that's such a critical part of your business as it starts growing.
And I think that one of my advantages in running Extreme Networks and building it up to the size that it is now is the fact that I was never a great engineer. So I was making it up as I went along, and it wasn't too hard to hire people that were smarter than me. So, you know, it was fairly easy for me to take a back step. I know it's, you know, and I speak to business owners who've got, you know, 15, 20 or even, you know, 50 employees, and, you know, they're taking calls at, you know, 9 o'clock at night trying to work out Hyper-V situations. And it's like, are you sure you don't have anyone in your organization who could do that? Like, oh, you know, it's pretty technical. It's like, seriously? Like, that's not what you need to be worried about. I think it's the biggest thing, particularly in IT now, where I think you've got to be going for scale, because the one and two man band, those days are, you know, becoming increasingly difficult to sustain. And you really need, culture is one of the things that makes it easier to build your business. You know, having a really strong idea about the kind of people that you want to work with, having a strong idea about the kind of attitude that you want them to have and to share with your customers, that makes it easier to grow your business, which means that it makes it easier for you to step away from the day-to-day grind of running an IT, of being a technical person. Because as you build the company, there's a whole new set of problems that you've got to deal with. And if you're worried about, you know, whether some server's been correctly rolled out or whether some firewall's working appropriately, I don't think you're going to be able to do it, because there's a lot of work that needs to be done that isn't technical, and someone needs to be doing it, which is exactly, you know, I took my eye off the ball with the culture, you know, and I think too many people do that. They're not thinking about hiring the right people, getting the right systems in place to maintain their culture, or, you know, policing the culture. And it just makes it difficult, you know, high turnover, unsatisfied customers, unsatisfied staff, you know, not wanting to go to work. I see that in some of our customers, you know, people where the culture's no good, and they don't really have the knowledge to be able to fix the culture. And you can see they hate going to work. And I think that's really sad.
Well, I think that the other sad thing that we're going to have to do is bring an end to this episode. We could obviously go on chatting about this quite in depth here. And I think we've got a huge amount of information and, you know, great experience there and feedback from yourself, James. And what I'll get you to do now, I think that was a great summary of what we've talked about and what we've covered, and again, some action steps for people to take away and work on. So if you want to just let everybody know what's the best way for them to get in contact with you or find out what you're doing, if they've got further questions maybe about what we've discussed, how can they get in contact with you?
Yeah, sure. Just ping us an email at info@extremenetworks.com.au. And I'm happy to. It's one of the things, like, I've been really lucky in my business career to have some really good and really intelligent business mentors. So I'm always happy to help out other people who are trying to build their business as well.
Cool. All right. Well, again, I'll thank James for his time today, obviously stepping outside of his business and sharing that information with everybody. I think there's a huge amount of value that can be taken away by people to help them grow their business and understand how important culture is and how important it is when you start growing your business. So for those of you who do want to get in contact with me, my best place is my website, www.ciaops.com. The blog is always a good place to see what I'm up to at blog.ciaops.com. You can find me on the Twitter at @directorcia. And with that, I thank everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast. You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For guides on using technologies like SharePoint Online and Office 365, visit www.ciaops.com/publications. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.